Okay, so this morning we're turning towards the fourth Brahma Vihara Upeksha, or Upeka, which is generally translated as equanimity. It's also translated sometimes as balance. I was just thinking just then, it's the fourth Brahma Vihara, and I was thinking about some of you might know T.S. Eliot's The Four Quarters. I don't know the quartets, thank you. I don't know them very well, you can tell, can't you? But there's this one line in those quartets that I really love, which is at the still point of the turning world. So I think that still point of the turning world is quite a lovely poetic description of what equanimity is. And interestingly, actually, I first heard that those quartets when I was on my ordination retreat, and I was doing a lot of meditating with the Buddha, the historical Buddha, and in a way, I felt that line in a way summed up for me the my relationship with the Buddha. So the Buddha is or represents for me that still point of the turning world. That he is a symbol for that. And he's a symbol for me trying to become that still point in the turning world, or to find that in myself. And I suppose meditating with that, or meditating on the Buddha, what I have realized is that, well, for me anyway, that one can find that still point, but it's not like, well, it's not like I found it and then I'm stuck there. I stay there. So you all probably relate to this experience. We all have times in our lives where we can feel more calm or positive or insightful, where we see things a bit more clearly for a time. And then we kind of slip off, And but this line, this still point of the turning world, I think relates quite well to Upeksha. So Upeksha, as the fourth Brahma Vihara, is where our metta is kind of infused with perspective. So it's infused with a perspective that life has both pleasure and pain, that there will be both suffering and karuna and joy and mudita. That the world contains all, is all of that. And that that one is not right and one is not wrong. So we're back to that quote from Rumi that we started the week with. Out beyond our ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. So it's not that when we're suffering, we're getting it wrong, and that when we're happy, we're getting it right. Even though that is what we are told over and over and over again. In so many subtle ways. So in a way, that's you could say the whole spiritual life is a relearning, a relearning of this perspective that life contains both pleasure and pain, loss and gain, joy and sorrow. So Upeksha is all about perspective. So we have this saying in England of having rose-tinted glasses, don't we? So I think when we're practicing the Dharma, what we're trying to do is have Dharma-tinted glasses. We're trying to create Dharma-tinted glasses. And with this Brahma Vihara, our Dharma-tinted glasses will just be, would be with ourselves kindly in our experience, knowing that this experience will change. And experience is always changing. It's not fixed. It's not solid. It's not me. It's not mine. I'm not getting it right. I'm not getting it wrong. It's just a flow. Life is a flow. So perspective, we would have that perspective on life. So upeksha is perspective. It's all about having a Dharma perspective, seeing experience with that perspective. And it's a perspective that all things are conditioned. Yeah. That everything in experience arises based upon conditions and passes away based when those conditions end. So in a way, this is the central teaching of the Buddha, conditionality. And conditionality has different levels, so you might have heard of these. I'm not going to go into them in huge depth here, but conditionality has different levels, different types. They're called the five niyamas. Yeah? So five niyamas are five different types of conditionality. I think the five niyamas are a really important teaching, actually. So the five different types of conditionality. So we are conditioned in five different ways. We are conditioned by inorganic laws. So that's things like the laws of gravity. So I'm conditioned by the law of gravity. I think you probably all are too. We are also conditioned by organic laws. So yeah, that could be things like you catch a cold simply because you sat next to someone in a small aircraft that also had a cold. That happened to me last year, actually. It was quite embarrassing. I had a really bad cold and I was flying out on one of these week-long package holidays that I occasionally confess I do. And when I flew back, I was sat next to exactly the same person who quite grumpily told me he'd had my cold all week. Eek. It was a bit of a conversation stopper. Anyway, that is a very good example of the organic type of conditionality. So then we are conditioned by psychological factors. So we have a mind. We all have a brain, a mind that's made up in a certain kind of way, and that mind has a propensity for certain psychological conditioning. So we are the next level of conditionality. We is karma. So that's this idea that if we act skillfully, that will have certain consequences. Happiness will arise. If we act unskillfully, that will also have consequences. That suffering arises. So it's karma is just it, karma itself just means action, but our actions have consequences. So that's the whole the law of karma is this fact that that our actions will have consequences in our life. And then the fifth law of conditionality is the dharmic level, the Dharma Niyama, the Dharma level of conditionality, which is quite elusive. It's quite hard to kind of pin down what that is. But every day we've been meditating with these different Buddhas that have been helping us transform our poisons and shine forth particular good qualities. So the fact that we're dwelling with those Buddha qualities will be having an effect on our consciousness, and that is one way of thinking about the Dharma Niyama. So I think it's really important to understand that there are five layers or levels or laws or types of conditionality. So karma is really important, yes, but it is not the only level of conditionality. So when something happens to us, say it's difficult, that could have been due to previous unskillful karma, and it could also be the effect of those other niyamas. Yeah. So things aren't black and white, and I think karma, when grasped wrongly, is a bit of a nettle, and if it's taken literally, it's very gross actually. Oh, that happened to him because of his previous bad karma. That's a wrong view, yeah. So conditionality is not that black and white. So when, if I get run over by a bus tomorrow, That'd be quite difficult. That'd be quite impressive at Darrell Acre. No, there's no bus service in Bettersfield. You'd have to go quite a long way to get run over by a bus here. Don't know if that's good or bad news. And tracting, yeah. The car park, someone having a speeding crisis, I don't know. Anyway, if I, yeah. So if something bad happened tomorrow, like I got run over by a bus, I couldn't say, oh, that's my bad karma. There would be a whole heap of conditions, crazy conditions, that would have had to happen to bring that into being, yeah? And it wouldn't have just been because I was, someone didn't like me or I had said something horrible to them the day before or something. If you get really bored, you could think about the conditions that would have to come into being for that to happen. Anyways. Okay. On a more serious level. Yeah, so upeksha, an important part of the reflection of upeksha is seeing that, that we are conditioned, that our experience rises and falls based upon conditions. And part of seeing that our experience arises and falls based upon conditions is taking seriously that our actions do have consequences. Yeah? So they're not the whole story, but they are an important part of the story. Yeah. So the Buddha was very clear, the first two verses of the Dhammapada, the Buddha says, experiences are led by mind, produced by mind, and preceded by mind. If one speaks or acts with an impure mind, so an unskillful mind, suffering follows, like the cartwheel that follows the hoof of an ox. Experiences are preceded by mind, led by mind, and produced by mind. If one speaks or acts with a pure, skillful mind, happiness follows, like a shadow that never departs. Yeah? So it's something for us to reflect on today, yeah? So really reflect on, well, to what extent do we really believe that our experience is conditioned and that our actions have consequences? And where have we seen that arise in our life? Where have we seen that our skillful actions have led to painful consequences for ourselves or others? Where have our skillful actions led to happiness, yeah, for ourselves or others? So that's kind of a bit of the dharmic perspective behind this practice of upeksha. So yeah, it's our metta having this perspective that things are conditioned and they arise and fall based upon conditions, and that we have to take some responsibility in that. But in real time, what does it look like to practice upeksha? Yeah? So I was thinking of an example. So recently, at the Birmingham Buddhist Centre, I've started a new initiative, some of the gals here will know, called Sangha Night. It's not a new concept, clearly, but for some reason we didn't have one at the Birmingham Centre, yes. Yeah. So I've started this Sangha Night as a way of kind of building Sangha at the centre, a place where people can come together of all different levels of experience. So it started this thing. It's been like it's like a bit my baby as a chair, and it's my first big project as chair. And anyone that's taken on a new project that's a bit of their baby knows that, praise and blame are part of the territory, aren't they? So when on the first night we kind of gave this launch about Sangha, like why Sangha was really important to me, what my vision was, some people loved it. Some people hated it. So I got both pleasant praise and blame, pleasant and unpleasant feedback in relation to that. Of course, Actually, I have to admit, I got more praise than I got blame, but the blame had a bigger effect. Anyone notice that? It's our neuroscience-wise, we are wired up that way. Yeah, the brain is more attuned to pain, to negativity, than it is to remembering pleasant things. So the brain will remember painful things and commit them to memory much, much quicker and more frequently than it will remember pleasant things and commit them to memory. That's a bit of the science. But we know it in experience, don't we? Yeah. So when I experienced this, it was an email actually saying from this person saying that how much they didn't like my talk. And that's how I received it. Actually, I don't think they quite so strongly meant it like that. And when I saw them later, they said, "God, I didn't mean for you to take that quite so personally." And I think they didn't actually. They really didn't mean for me to take it personally. But it's very easy to take things personally, isn't it? So when I read that email, there was a lot of painful Vedana. So we're going back to what Prasanamati was talking about, what I've been talking about, this kind of Vedana. It's kind of feeling in your guts, isn't it? Of like, it doesn't really even have words. It kind of just clenches. So I've learned, you receive an email like that, do not reply. For at least 24, 48 hours, right? That's probably the best bit of advice I can give you on this retreat. Do not reply. Do not even think to reply. Sometimes I send a one-liner saying, "I've received your email. I'll get back to you in a couple of days. I need to have a chance to think about it." So you can, they know you've got it. You've parked it. Don't even think about it. Don't reread it for 24 hours either, probably. Just let the body settle. Yeah. So I was thinking about this. It's hot, isn't it? It's like we receive that sort of blame and it's kind of hot. We get into these kind of hot thoughts and we have a choice. So when I'm like that, I probably do need to go and have a good rant to somebody. Choose the person wisely and make it clear that you're having a rant. Yeah? That's fine. That's part of the process. But then once we've done the rant, I think this is for 3 R's: rant, reflection, and rumination. It's really good. I was thinking it would be good for us to know the difference in ourselves. When are we ranting at ourselves or someone else? When are we just ruminating? So going over and over the same old stuff, stirring it up in an unhelpful way. And when are we reflecting? Because we do need to reflect on stuff, don't we? Stuff happens and we need to reflect on it. But sometimes we're just a bit stuck in the same old story and we're just pressing play. And actually, it's hurting us re-listening to that story. And sometimes that play's gone on fast forward and then we're back in the rant. Yeah. That's good just to know. So, yeah, when we receive something like that, we're definitely out of equanimity. We're into hot thoughts. And we're often working with our thoughts at this point. It's really important to remember that thoughts aren't facts at that point. That's a good thing to remind ourselves. And sometimes we need to unhook from the thoughts altogether. We need to just come back to the physical Vedana and just say, "I'll come back to your thoughts later." Sometimes we have lots and lots of what can feel like pressing questions in our mind, but actually, we just need to unhook from them. And that's when I turn to a quote like this from Rainer Maria Rilke. "Be patient towards all that is unsolved in your heart, and try to love the question themselves. Like locked rooms and like books that are now written in a very foreign tongue. Do not now seek the answers. which cannot be given to you, because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps you will then gradually, without noticing it, live along some distant day into the answer. So I think sometimes we find ourselves, we started off reflecting on something, and then we find ourselves in this kind of trying to find an answer kind of mental state, where there's a lot of questions and we're searching, as if someone could, as if we could answer the question, as if there is an answer. And actually sometimes there's not an answer, there's just questions, and that's all right. It's uncomfortable, but it's all right. Sometimes I think we have to give up wanting to understand. So we come in these times, I think we have to come back to the body, which is why there's so much focus in meditation to coming back to the body, to really learning how to dwell in the body. Because all those thoughts, all of that emotion will be on some level resonating in the body, physical sensation in the body. And when we can learn to unhook from all those thoughts and just come back and pay attention to what's happening in the body, we can pay attention to it in a different way. So Pema Chodron often talks about this as finding the soft spot. So finding a soft spot in the body. And I think when we come back to that and we can find a soft way of being with the tension in the body, then we find ourselves back nearer equanimity, back nearer apeksha. We're back with metta, with a bit of perspective. We've unhooked from the heat of what's happening. And it's not like you do this once. Yeah, you might do this every 30 seconds. Yeah, if something hot's going on for you. And it might be you can do it and you stay unhooked for a while, and half an hour later you're doing something and you notice you're back in reflection, and then that reflection might tip into rumination, that might tip into a rant, and then you have to go through the unhooking, finding a soft spot in the body, finding metta, coming back to equanimity. So we do it over and over, over and over and over. And it's good to help us know what helps get perspective. So this kind of unhooking that I'm talking about is one way. So that's a kind of coming back to the body, coming back to the breath. The breath can become a really good friend. It's not for everyone, actually. I work with some people who have a lot of breathing difficulties, and I think, oh, I don't know. The breath is a really good, probably one of my best friends. Because it's always there and it helps ground me. Yeah. My feet on the floor, that's another good one. So if things like that in the body, your feet on the floor, your breath, they help you ground, they help you get perspective, to come back, to step out of karanar when it's tipped into horrified anxiety, to step out of mudita when it's tipped into jealousy or resentment, to step out of metta when it's tipped into hatred. So we just step back, we step back to the body and the breath, and we learn to pay attention there. Other things help us get perspective as well. Things like going for a walk might help you get perspective. Being in nature, I think, is very good for most people in terms of this helping get perspective. Sometimes going to work's really good. Just getting on with something else, I find. Sometimes going to work makes you lose perspective too. I suppose it's all relative to what you do, isn't it? I think sometimes just getting on helps, That's what I mean. I used to find that when I lived here that I'd wake up in the morning and I check in, and sometimes I was a bit grumpy, and I had, I don't know, maybe I was a bit angsty about something that's happened the day before, or don't know, whatever. And sometimes I just say to people, look, I'll be fine, just give me a couple of hours in the office, answering my emails and just helping other people book on their retreats. It normally helped, yeah. Or, you know, simple things like washing up or hoovering. It's quite good, isn't it? One needs a bit of perspective. Or just drinking a cup of tea, yeah. So just a quick mention of the enemies. I'm not going to say loads about them. So the near enemy is neutrality, and the far enemy is cold indifference. So I think when it comes to upeksha, maybe it's true of the others, I just haven't thought about it. We're in the enemy when we've slipped off into aversion. So we think we're cool with what's going on. So we think we're being equanimous, but actually we're just a bit aversive. We don't really want to know how we feel. So if that's just a little bit, like we're doing a whatever, whatever. I hear that sound, just whatevs or something, even sure. Tevs. Or just whatever. Do people know what I mean by that when you just say, oh, whatever? Someone says, do you mind if I go out tonight? Oh, whatever. And actually, you do mind, you just can't be bothered to have the conversation. So you're feigning a kind of equanimity, neutrality, but actually, you're not really that neutral, let's face it, yeah? So when you find yourself saying whatever in that kind of way, or whatever your equivalent is, then just notice, are you as neutral as you think you are? And then I think the cold indifference is like when our heart has been really hardened. So that's often when we've been hurt. We feel hurt. And our heart's been a bit hardened. And we become indifferent. And that can feign a kind of, yeah, neutrality. We can look very equanimous, but we're not really. We're just a bit hardened. And I think when we find ourselves in those enemies, it's all, like always, it's always coming back to metta. It's always coming back to a kind of warming it all up. Warming it all up and moving towards how we actually feel.